If you're just tuning in, welcome. This is Mango Masala, the South Asian show here on Pi Radio, Manchester's number one youth-led radio station. My name's Gerns and I am here with Simran.
Hi, guys.
I do have to admit it was my laptop that was the problem. And you know why it was the problem, Simran? It's because it was still stuck on that DJ setting from when I was DJing. Like it like was as if it was going out to a different pair of decks kind of thing. So, you know, it's just that's just my life now. DJing.
Just DJ things. Who can blame him, guys?
I know.
He's just moved on past us.
Yeah. It's all right. I'll remember you. How are you doing, Simran?
I'm coming with you.
He's hopping on for the ride.
I don't know if you really acknowledge that you have a choice in the fact that your success is my success by proxy.
Fair enough. And likewise. Got anything to update us with that I can jump onto? Any success?
No, thanks for asking.
But what has been going on in your life, Simran? I know you had your cousin's wedding recently. So how was that?
I love weddings. I love weddings. I love Punjabi weddings specifically. They're so much fun. They're just such a laugh. Like, and also, it's funny because I just think like a lot of our generation, we don't understand a lot of the reasons why we do things. And even asking the older generation, oh, why do you have to do X, Y, and Z? Why can't certain things you can't throw in the bin? You have to like keep them or do certain things with them before you like discard of them, or really specific tiny little things, right? But even they don't have the answer to, you just do it.
I know. It's so funny. Like I went through this exact same experience when it was my wedding last year. And ultimately, it was my mother-in-law that was the main person who was expected to kind of know exactly what was going on. And she would was the person that we would look to kind of for answers. And there'd be so many times where even my aunt wouldn't know. And she'd like look to her mum to ask. And she would just be like, I don't know.
it's like you just do it. I can't give you the reason. And especially not right now, but you just need to do it. And the funniest thing about Carlos's wedding was your religious ceremony, because he had pamphlets for everyone on the chairs that basically explain the broad meaning of like everything that you have to do, what it means, what it symbolizes, why we do it, blah blah blah, right? But even still, there was so much that I didn't understand. I could tell Carlos and Mianca didn't understand it.
It was so funny.
Where like there was coconut chips or something, and you have to give it to the brother, or the brother gives it to you and you throw it in the fire, and then someone has to walk around. And the person who was leading the ceremony was fantastic because he was really funny. And while he was explaining things, I was just sat there. It was my first ever Hindu wedding ceremony, and I was just sat there like, what are they doing up there?
No, it was so funny. There was one instance where obviously like the family's like kind of on stage with you, and her brother was there. And he was like, he got told to like kind of like flick like kind of like holy water onto us kind of thing. But I don't think he ever got told to stop. So he was literally there for like 10 minutes, just like constantly like flicking like water.
Some things go in the fire. Some things go in someone else's hand. Some things go in a piece of cloth. Like some things walk, you have to walk around. You got to flick water at people.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
There is. I'm assuming that Sikh weddings are similar in the sense that it's like you don't really know what's going on, but you just
the religious part I actually think is really straightforward. And gurdwaras have started now for younger couples getting married. It's mandatory if you want to get married in that gurdwara, for certain gurdwaras, not all, but it's mandatory to go to like a course. It's a couple of hours long, a few weeks beforehand, and it basically explains why you're doing it. It's not just for a nice picture or video. It's not just for like the sake of doing it. It's for, you know, your relationship as a couple and God.
That's really cool. How do you feel about that? If like slash when it comes to your day, like would you
be like, yeah? I agree. And like I've personally like I like studying it anyway, so I like knowing the reasons why you do in the Sikh culture. Like you do four lavans, they're called, so four rounds around in the gurdwara. And you that each one symbolizes a different thing that connects your matrimony with God. And I really totally agree with like doing the course. It's only a few hours. And because the thing is, obviously, like a religious wedding doesn't stand in the eyes of the law, right? It's the civil ceremony. It's the civil that actually it's the piece of paper that you sign that signifies that you're married. Anyone can do the religious thing. Like it doesn't actually mean you're married technically from a legal perspective. So you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to figure out why you want to do it. Yeah. Is how I see it. And I think it is very important that if you are going to be in a place of worship, that you understand that it's not just for the sake of doing it for a nice, you know, video or whatever.
Aesthetic.
Yeah, it's not for the aesthetic. It's for God, essentially. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And even if you don't, even if you don't believe in that, knowing why you're doing it, like,
yeah, then it's like you don't have to do it. If you really don't believe in it, if you don't want to learn about it, you don't have to go to your place of worship and have that ceremony. Just have the civil and sign the piece of paper. Do you know what I mean?
Bit boring, though.
I know, a bit boring, but then I think you should go through the undertaking. Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
But I don't think our weddings are as multifaceted in the sense of, like, there's different elements. There's a few things, don't get me wrong, but it's not so, like, I feel like I never took my eyes off you guys at your wedding. Like, there was just so much happening the whole time.
You know, ours was supposedly short as well. Like, that was a shortened version, and it's still...
Yeah, I've heard they can go on for hours.
Yeah.
So did you understand why the coconut was doing this and why the water was getting flicked at whatever, you know...
I think to the extent that obviously I'd made those pamphlets beforehand, so like I kind of knew roughly what to expect. And I do think throughout it, just like the priest, like you say, he was very good, like in terms of both the audience, but also with us, in terms of like saying, okay, now you're doing this and it symbolizes blah, 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 which is like a good thing to have. But if you ask me now, like I couldn't tell you. Like, to be honest.
But is that more common in modern Hindu weddings now that the priest is explaining as he goes?
I think it probably depends on the couple. I went to a wedding in this summer that they were like a couple of years older than us, kind of vibe, but obviously still like same generation, and their priest was like similar, but he was a bit younger as well, and he was actually sat there with like an iPad, like literally like doing like literally like reading off the iPad kind of thing, but still like doing a good job kind of thing. And do like the kind of like broken down, because also that wedding, the bride was like fully white British, so like there was a whole, like half the people there didn't necessarily have an inkling of what was going on, so he was like good in that respect. But yeah, I don't know, because I haven't really been to any Hindu weddings where, or recently at least, where the groom and or bride or both are of like an older generation, where maybe they would be more likely to go for it.
Yeah, they would understand it.
Traditional. But this is what I'm thinking as well. Like, how do you see things playing out in terms of, you know, how we're kind of sat here, like being like, oh yeah, we have no idea what's going on, you just do it. But what's that going to mean in like a couple of generations' time?
I know, because it really worries me as well, because being from the Punjabi community, we are, you know, by mass a lot smaller. And then if you, you know, then divide it down into the diaspora, we're a lot smaller. So I do, it does actually like worry me to that, like to that extent, that I think like as the older generations die out, the language is going to fade out, the cultural understanding is going to fade out, you know, we're just going to assimilate more and more, which is not always a bad thing, but it's just, it kind of, it dilutes, right? And you can see it with people that are my generation. I think I'm second. I never understand it. I think I'm second generation.
I never understand if it's like, if you're born here, like...
Basically, my parents were born here.
Yeah.
My grandparents were not. They were born in Punjab.
I feel like that makes you second generation.
I think it does make me
But then
second.
I find it, like, sorry to go on a bit of a tangent here, but then I get like a bit confused as well, because like my... Obviously, this is purely speaking from my dad's side, but like my dad wasn't born here. So technically, I am the first person born here. But then I'm obviously not first generation. Like, it feels wrong saying I'm first generation. Partially because obviously on my other side, I've literally got like full on like British heritage. But also in the sense that it's like, I don't know. It's confused. Can someone please explain it to us?
Basically, my parents are born here, was the point. And I see it like, my Punjabi is not great, but I probably have top three best Punjabi out of people in my generation on both sides of my family. And that's saying something, to be honest. And I just think that the cultural understanding is dying out of why we do certain things. Like, I didn't understand why we did half the things we did during the wedding week. But again, it's because we were just told to do it. And that's that. Obviously, I know in previous weddings I've been to, there's a lot of like Bolian, which is traditional folk songs, which get sung during certain parts of ceremonies that happen throughout the wedding week. We didn't have any of those because we didn't have anyone that knows them. Even amongst the older ladies, like normally it's women that sing the songs while something's going on. Like we have like, it's called a Mayan. Carlos had one too. Like it's like a cleansing ceremony where you rub like haldi and besan and stuff like on the skin. It's kind of like a face mask spa treatment type of thing. Normally songs are sung during that and we didn't have any because no one knew any. So I think there are certain parts that are changing and kind of dying out. So it's kind of, I don't know what it's going to mean for like future generations, but it's,
I think it would be interesting to have a conversation with people that are still in the homeland kind of thing and see whether it's the same there. Because that's what I'm not sure of. Is it because obviously we're speaking from the point of being in the diaspora, or is it literally also happening back home that like as these generations move on, people are becoming less traditional? But then I feel like that's a given anyway. Like even the what we know as tradition, probably a couple of like generations before was vastly different, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, it's gonna change, but yeah, it's just a bit weird witnessing it kind of thing.
It is, there was a really, you must have had this at your wedding for your Maya, the rangoli powder, the colored powder that you have on the floor that makes like a little design.
No, we didn't. I didn't have that. I don't think.
Did Hindi people do that or no?
It's the first time hearing of it.
Oh, okay. Well, we do like we use. It's called rangoli, and it's like a powder, really like really strongly dyed, different colors of powder. You make like a little design on the floor, and then you kind of sit above that, and that's when you do the maya, the little spa treatment thing. You sing the songs during it, and then afterwards, the mother of the bride or the mother of the groom, actually both bride and groom do it, but the mother will come. Wipe it up with their hands with water, and then you have to like obviously it forms like a paste, and then you put 5 handprints on the wall of the house, and that symbolizes like that they'll always be like home, and home is where like they'll always have like shelter and protection or something like that. And then we had the scraps of all the powder, like all the paste, and we were like, I had the bag of it and I was like, oh, I'm just gonna throw this in the bin. Everyone, no, you can't throw it in the bin. I was like, okay, well, what do I do with it? They're like, you have to go put it in the mud next to a tree and like put pat it into the mud. I was like, can anyone tell me why I have to go pat it into the mud now? And no one could tell me why.
You got the mud pat job.
We couldn't hoover it up. We couldn't hoover it up off the floor because you can't get rid of it. Like you have to just like let the wind take it away.
No, I do kind of, I understand that, like, to be fair, like now you've explained it. I do think like, I would, like, in hindsight, I would have maybe approached it like, what should I do with this rather than I'm going to chuck this in the bin kind of thing.
I just, well, it was in a sandwich bag. Like, they just put it into a sandwich bag. I had it and I was like, bin, right? Like, I just couldn't think. And everyone's like, no, oh my God.
Can I be the mud patter at your wedding?
You're not my mum.
Oh, what? Wait, but you're not their mum.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry,
can I be the mud patter?
Yeah, you can be the mud patter.
Great.
I thought you wanted to take my mum's job.
No, don't worry. She can have that. I just want to be involved in the scraps.
That's fine. We'll just put you in the garden somewhere.
Can't wait. But
and then, sorry. I was going to say one more story. Was like in the same ceremony, I was the representing face of unmarried women. And I love that for me because basically there's this other tradition that I'd never heard of, that before you start the maya, you have like a little rockery type thing. Oh, I thought it was on my desk so I could show you, but I don't have it. It's like just like a red string with like little bells and jingle jangles on it. And we were about to start and then some like older person was like, wait, no, you need to tie these on 5 unmarried women. First of all, that was said. And in the same breath, every single person just went, Simran. I was like, guys.
Lol. Like, what do they do? Tie all 5 on you?
Pardon?
What do they do? Tie all 5 on you?
At one point, because seriously, there was actually not 5 unmarried women present. There was like 2.
Dearie
so
me.
I got one, someone else got one, and then the other 3 were literally about to get tied on me at one point, and then they got sent off home to get tied on 2 teenagers and a baby.
The baby, I don't know how I feel about that. That feels a bit, I don't know. Like, why are you bringing the baby into it? Let the baby live its life. maybe the baby doesn't want to get married. Like,
no, I don't think it's for marriage. It's for like blessings, like just like having a blessed life. Like, it's just like whatever. But hello, I got mugged off.
Well, I think the way that we do or did it is actually, I think it's a bit funner than that. In terms of ours doesn't happen like before the holdy ceremony, it happens afterwards. And it's when all the bride's side are there, she has like all of the like bells and stuff tied on, and all the unmarried women kind of sit below her, and she just shakes, and then she shakes it, and whoever the stuff falls onto, that's like, oh, they're gonna get married next, kind of thing. It's kind of like throwing the flowers,
like throwing a bouquet. Yeah
So it's obviously it's a bit, I think that's a bit more fun, because it's kind of like leaving it to chance kind of thing, and it's like, oh, like who's it gonna and of course, like, I think it literally fell onto my anchor's older sister first, so that was like really funny. But yeah, but it is interesting discussing it with yourself, and even as someone that has a somewhat limited understanding of Hindu wedding practice, like to see the similarities and differences and subtle like like things that are like semi the same but not, kind of thing.
Because I'm surprised it's that different.
Mm.
I thought you're like, yeah.
Considering like Mayanka is like Punjabi Hindu as well, so like, yeah.
Yeah. But there's probably a lot of things that like you guys do, and maybe some Sikh Punjabi people do, we just don't because it's in our family and vice versa. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a lot of these practices are very cross-cultural.
Yeah, more to do with culture than like religion kind of thing, yeah.
And it could literally be to do with like the village you come from. Like maybe a village down the road don't do that for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like even we went to a Islamic wedding recently and they had a Bharat, and we were just kind of like, oh, wasn't expecting that. Like, well, I suppose.
Oh,
like,
were they Indian?
No. So I was a bit like, I don't know. There's every possibility that they could have just been doing it for like, oh, let's just do it because it's kind of like the culture kind of thing. Like, it's kind of adopted kind of thing. But at the same time, there's every possibility that they could be just like, it's to do with like where they've come from kind of thing. And that it's like,
yeah. That's so, what I mean. It is so cross-cultural. Like, I don't think there's any rhyme or reason to why certain families pick up certain traditions and practices and execute them. But it's nice, though, to see the differences.
Yeah. And differences and similarities is definitely cool.
I will say though, what we were talking about earlier, like now it's our generation. I said this, I must have said this last year when you got married as well, but now it's our generation kind of doing the weddings.
Mm.
They're carnage.
In what sense?
Well, in terms of like my family, not just this wedding, but past weddings, no one knows what's going on ever.
Yeah, sounds about right.
But it's also just so fun. Like I bet older generations didn't know what the hell was going on ever anyway. Maybe some of them, and they were panicking about certain things because we were younger, we just never noticed it. But now we're in charge. But now I'm just like, it makes it so funny. Like it's just a hilarious thing to do with like your cousins that you're close with. Like it just becomes like a bit of a fun day out.
Yeah. I love that. I love the bride would love doing that. This is my fun day out. Like, forget about your wedding. It's all about...
No, not the wedding day. The wedding day was so smooth. Like, she was the calmest, most composed, like, was touching. Like, she was on it. She was so chill. And then the reception was, like, so smooth and perfect as well. But, like, it was just the wedding week that, like, was just hilarious. Like, I just feel it was so funny.
Yeah. Good. Like I'm like, again, one final example of that, I remember like we did like a satsang puja like at the beginning of the week, that was like the first event of the wedding, and they had like said that they were gonna like just, they weren't gonna have any kind of person officiating it, they were just gonna like kind of play out of YouTube kind of thing, like just play and kind of sit there and do like the prayers and whatever. And I obviously didn't have any kind of knowledge about what this was going to entail kind of thing. I just got told, oh, yeah, you're going to play out of your laptop. I was like, yeah, cool, whatever. And then the event was meant to start at 6. But obviously me, knowing Asian timing, I was like, okay, cool. So realistic. I didn't say it in my head. I was like, realistically, it's not going to start till 6:30, whatever. And also I'm the groom. I can just kind of like roll up at any point kind of thing. But so I was upstairs and then suddenly it was like 5 to 6. And it's like, Carlos, where's the laptop? What are we doing? And I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, because it's like a religious thing, it needs to start at a certain time. So like, it needs to start at 6. So I was literally like, why has no one told me this? So I was literally like rushing back to like plug it in, hit play, like, but it's just stuff like that that's just like, would have been nice to have been told. Yeah. That. Like, because obviously, again, I was just like, I know, like, to all the weddings I've been to as well, it's kind of just like, if you rock up like a ridiculous time, it's like kind of just like whatever, but it was just like, yeah.
Yeah, weddings. But Indian weddings are chaotic, but they're so fun.
Yeah, indeed. Moving away from weddings, only a couple of days left of being in the 27 Club. I'm sure.
Thank
you'll
God.
Yeah, you'll be happy. You are the first hater. If there's one person, if there's one hater in the world for the 27 Club,
if being 27 has no haters, then I'm dead.
Yeah, literally. Ugh. But yeah.
You feel happy about it?
I feel indifferent. I'm kind of like, I feel like I like the word, I think I've said this before, I like the way 28 sounds. So it's just like, I think what's
weird. Yeah, 27 sucks.
I think what's weird is seeing people who are in the year above me at school, like turning 29. And then I'm like, you know, it's like, oh, it's coming.
Like, oh,
it's like,
yeah.
Oh, wait, if they're turning 29, then that means it's not that far away.
Next year, you'll be 29, which means the year after you'll be 30.
Well, yeah, literally in like, 2 and a bit months, I'll be able to say next year I'm 30.
But I think 30 is so hot.
You make of it what you will, doesn't it? I feel like you're going to spend the whole 29 just kind of like worrying about turning 30, and then when it actually happens, it's just like, yeah, cool.
Because truly and honestly, who is ever where they want to be? Unless you're like ridiculous, like, there's always going to be something. There's always going to be something to compare yourself to. There's always going to be something to be hung up on. Like, just enjoy the ride, you know? And I should probably take that advice.
Yeah.
As someone who's complained, who spent the last 11 and a half months complaining about being 25.
See, and I think it's weird as well, because like, you're literally, oh, I'm turning 25 in this month, but I literally like, I feel like in my head, I think of you as being 20, like 26 anyway. So it's just like,
damn.
Yeah. From my perspective, I'm just kind of just like, whatever.
She's just slowly turning the age that I think she is in my head.
Yeah, basically.
Year by year. I've just been 26 for like 5 years for you.
Yeah, literally. Anyway, happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday, God.
Thank you. I'll be sending you the Instagram post soon to for my birthday.
Didn't I tell you this the other day?
Yeah, you were like, make sure you send it to me. I was like, okay, I need to do that. Next thing, what was this? It's spooky season.
Huh?
It's spooky season.
Oh, guys, it's spooky. I love Halloween, guys. I literally, it makes me so happy. I love, like, when I see Christmas decor now, I love Christmas, but when I see Christmas decor now, I'm like, please just let me have Halloween first.
You know, like, just not even, like, Christmas cards. I saw in a, like, estate thing, someone's got, like, Christmas trees or Christmas lights outside the house. I'm like, what are you doing? It's not even my birthday yet. Like,
that's mad.
Yeah.
But I just think, let Halloween pass. Whether you like Halloween or not, let Halloween pass, and then you can gear up for Christmas.
But not songs,
you know,
according
to Thanksgiving,
Simran.
Right? Like, Thanksgiving's in November, right?
End of November. It's like the,
and that's basically
the last
like,
weekend.
You celebrate
Thursday.
It quite similar to Christmas, right? Like, you have like a big dinner.
Yeah,
comes
I find that so weird. Like, I understand, obviously, it's to do with like where that fell in the calendar, the actual event kind of thing. But
it's
I also
like
find,
month apart.
Yeah, I find it so weird that they will make the massive effort, especially considering how big America is. They will make the massive effort during winter time
so
as well
true.
To travel all the way back home to do Thanksgiving, and then a month later do the same thing again. And I know obviously it's nice seeing your family twice, but it's also like, how is anyone affording it? Especially with Americans having only like 2 weeks off like a year. Like, it's mad.
I don't understand. Anyway, yeah. We could be here forever Americans. If we start that conversation. Love Halloween. Makes me so happy. This is the part of the year where I genuinely...
What are we looking at now, Simran?
If you can hear this, guys, hang on, let's do some ASMR. It's my vitamin D tablets,
I'm
guys.
Tell you, your microphone is not picking that up. I'm sorry. The topping did not get picked up.
Whatever. So, guys, I'm taking my vitamin D tablets. Everyone needs to start taking their vitamin D.
Right. That's great. Thank you for that. How is this related to spooky season at all?
Sorry, because I was just saying, like, this is the part of the year. Like, I love summer. I'm a spring and summer girl through and through. And I hate when it's cold and dark and wet and dark at 3 p.m. and whatever, right? Like the UK, bad vibes.
Mm.
But this is the part of the year that I love. Like the weather's cold. It's not gross and disgusting. Like it's just nice and like, oh, it's just nice. And the leaves are all orange. And it's just
so it's more to do right with like the time of year rather than the actual spooky Halloween itself.
No, I love Halloween.
But that's what I don't understand, because like literally I think of you and like you're literally terrified of clowns. So I'm like, how can
I'm
you...
terrified of everything. This is what I was going to talk about when I said spooky season, because what's your favorite horror film?
I think I like horror films where they're a bit kind of silly. Like I like is it slasher where it's like one person dies and then another person? I like it when there's like that it starts off with a big group and then one person dies and then another person dies and it's like kind of like that kind of thing.
Like Scream.
Yeah, no, I think I did like Scream, although we don't like Scream anymore because they got rid of Melissa Barrera for speaking about Palestine. So anyway, moving on.
Goodness.
Yeah. But it's sad because I really did like those movies that they released recently as well. But anyway, yeah, I like ones where it starts off with a big group, even like it's maybe even starts out in school kind of thing, and it's kind of like there's like a big group, and it's like one by one they're kind of meeting their like demise, and then it's kind of like, ooh, it's gonna be last, and then there's like a big backstory as to how it came about. I like those ones rather than ones
sadistic.
Where it, no, because it's kind of like it. A lot of the time, it's kind of
they're all sadistic. They're all sadistic.
No, but a lot of the time, those ones are actually a bit less scary because it's kind of just like, you know, everyone.
Is it kind of like it's also based on the premise of like, you know, the acting, the gore, the effects are not necessarily going to be like top tier.
No, not necessarily. It's more that you know everyone's gonna die, so it's not really that like
even like the plot. Yeah, like the plot's not that complicated.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's just like, you know,
but it's kind of like there's like kind of like a backstory from the beginning, and it's just like, yeah, whatever. I prefer them rather to ones where it's like actual like, okay, that's really weird. Like, what's going on there?
I
like,
cannot stand the conceptual ones where like take Human Centipede for example. Mm. Like, I cannot fathom how those things make it through the multiple lines of approval.
Well, I know some of them, like, what film is it that is it called a Serbian film or something? That film,
is it The Walrus?
I don't know about what. I've never watched it, but I just know there's a film. I think it is literally translates to a Serbian film.
Oh right.
And it's like it's literally banned in multiple countries because it's just so weird. And I read the plot on Wikipedia. And I was actually like, oh my gosh.
But like, even take like Saw. I recently watched the newest Saw film. I still cringe thinking about it. Not cringe like cringy, like cringe like, oh my God, they're cutting their leg off. Cringe. Like, it's the concept of Saw is crazy to me. Like,
yeah.
It's just gore. There's not, sorry if anyone gets mad, but I don't think there's that much of a plot to the Saw films. Like, it really is just based on the crazy gore scenes.
But I think the thing that's mad about like things like that and like Chainsaw Massacre, for example, is that it's actually possible. Like
who is thinking of these things? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I've actually seen, as someone who hates horror films, I don't watch a lot of films in general, but as someone who absolutely hates horror films, I have seen quite a few of the Saw films. And there's some of the, I think there's a really old one where they're like locked in a house, and it is so sadistic, it is so sick and twisted that I was just like, this is crazy. Like, who even thought of this concept? Like, oh, it's mad. And I've never watched like anything like Human Centipede and stuff, and I probably never will because
Me and my friends watch Human Centipede. You know what, like, it does freak you out though. Like, me and my friends, I remember it was like the summer between first and second year of uni, one time me and my friends just like watched Human Centipede. And I remember during it, I was just kind of like, this is a bit weird. But then I'm like the designated driver. So back in those times, I would be the person that kind of like, I literally would go around dropping everyone off before going home. It's like, that's like cute in itself. But anyway, I would do that. And I remember I dropped Sachin off last, and his like family home is like very much like, it's a nice area, but it's also quite like fields and stuff, and it's quite like dark and whatever. I remember dropping him off and then like driving down like a country lane and then be like, oh my gosh, I am actually terrified right now. Hit the car lock, get me home. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no, I can't deal. But then this is just me. This whole section about spookies is just me proclaiming that I'm a weenie, because I'm just going to go through every character, every type of horror film, and I can't do it. I can't do Possession. I can't do the supernatural. I can't do the paranormal. I can't do none of that. I can't do the demons, the religious ones, like the nun. I've seen the nun. Oh, my God, that was terrifying.
Can I just say something, actually? One thing I absolutely hate is horror movie trailers. Because
I'm getting scared.
No,
I'm actually getting scared just talking about this. And there's an Amazon man in my driveway, and he just really scared me.
I hate
Home Alone.
No, I hate. Right, don't announce that on radio to whoever's listening. Someone, why have you
no
done that?
No one knows where I. No one knows where I live.
That you know of. Anyway, right.
That's horrible.
Anyway, what I was saying, I hate horror movie trailers. Because you can't control when they're going to come up. When you're like, say you're in the cinema and you're seeing something with a rating that has above like 12 or 15 or even 18. Why is Simran going and checking a house? What is
I need to leave the door open in case someone comes up the stairs.
All right, great. Yeah, it'll be a very good like visual thing if you do end up getting like attacked by if you get attacked by a demon. It's gonna look great on camera, so thank you for that. We'll get the full thing. For goodness sakes, come down and listen to my story. Sit down. You were the one that wanted to talk about this. I don't understand what's going on.
I really regret it.
Right. I hate horror movie trailers, and the reason why I hate them is because you have absolutely no control over when they're going to come through. If you actually are a bit of like a horror movie fan, then you can go and decide, okay, I'm going to go to the cinema and see this film, I'm going to stream this film, whatever. Horror movie trailers, whether you're sitting in the cinema or whether you're just watching something on streaming, like say like stuff like ITV or Channel 4 and stuff, where they have like adverts in between the various segments, you have no control over when those are going to come out, and you can't hit pause. Like, there's no way for you to do that. And especially in the cinema, I'm just kind of stood there like, yes, I've come to see like a 15, but it's like because it's a rom-com that maybe has a few sex scenes in. I don't want to see a horror movie. Leave me alone.
Oh my God. Talk to him.
I didn't sign up for this. I did not consent to being shown a horror movie, okay?
We are talking about what matters right now.
Yes.
Talk your talk, King.
I was sat there watching Corey. I was watching Corey last night, and this thing, the new Smile movie trailer for that comes out. I'm literally like, I just want to go back to Coronation Street. I just want to see what's happening with Gale. Why are you showing me a smiling thing? No.
This also reminds me of the time that my friends forced me to, they took me to the cinema and they made me watch Annabelle. And I brought headphones and an eye mask. And I sat there for however long that film was. Peaceful.
Yeah. Don't understand
I can't do any of it. I can't do, like, you know the ones that are like, they're not necessarily like gory or violent, they're just sick and twisted, like it's just about like stalking and just like real life things, like just
Have you ever watched in the Final Destination movies?
No. Will I do know there's some crazy things that happen with some truck with like logs on it. That's all I know.
Yeah, that's in the second one. But do you know the plot behind it?
No.
It's basically
people just die in crazy ways, isn't it?
Well, it's basically like it always starts off with there's an instance where some kind of disaster happens. So the first one is like a plane crash. The second one is a like the log thing that you just mentioned. And it always happens, and then suddenly time rewinds, and one person that was involved, it's revealed that it was a vision that they had. So then they're like, oh my gosh, like, we need to get out of this situation. We can't do this. So then they end up like removing themselves from the situation, along with like a couple of other people who are like, what's going on? Like, why are they doing that? They remove from the situation. Everyone's always like, why is this person being crazy? What's going on? And then the actual disaster happens. I don't know what you're looking at your door for. There's nothing that, like, a plane's not going to come through your door, Simran. Touch wood.
I also live in a really scary... I do live quite near Heathrow. I do... I do live... Oh, no. By Heathrow, I meant Gatwick.
For goodness sake. Now we're narrowing it down by square mile as you speak.
Guys, I live in quite an old house, and like when the like heating comes on and stuff, it proper creaks, and now I'm getting really booped out. Like
I used to be freaked out by that. I remember when I was little, it used to be the thing that I could always like hear like the pipes and stuff, and I'd always get really,
I'm genuinely
like,
such a weenie. I'm a weenie and proud. Like
how are you? I don't 25. How is this? You're scared of noises. But anyway, final destination, they have the premonition, they remove themselves and others from the situation. The disaster then happens, but then it's like they've essentially cheated death because they were meant to die and they didn't. So then it's like one by one, they each end up dying a different way. And it's always like really kind of like far-fetched things. Like there's one in like the third one where it's really weird, and it's kind of like these two girls that are like on sunbeds and they kind of get trapped in and like electrocuted kind of thing. Like it's really like, and it is kind of disturbing because it's always things that are actually like real life that could very, it's not very easily could happen, but it's like not beyond the imagination. So yeah, like you holding those pills, they could think of something that would happen with those pills where like you like drop them on the floor and then bend over to pick them up, and they're like
they're like, the thing is with like horror is I would never put myself in a situation where like I'm in the woods by myself. Like, I wouldn't go to the woods anyway. I'm an indoors girl.
Yeah,
you know,
these people.
Guys, I just can't do horror. Like, I really don't even get me started on like It and clown films. And
I love when you said spooky season, I thought this was going to be, oh, maybe Simran actually is into all of this stuff, and it's like, yeah, no, you're really not.
I hate it. We could do like a segment where you like force me to watch a horror film and just get my reaction, because I would just not be happy.
Content idea. Write that down.
Write it down. I just don't like it. I don't understand how anyone enjoys it. Like the adrenaline, the cortisol. No, thank you.
Yeah, what is cortisol? Like, I thought it was a
stress hormone.
Oh, I thought it was a positive thing. Oh, that's dopamine, isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Learn something new.
Carlos did not do biology.
I did actually, and I got an A star. So.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Take that. Anyway, moving away from horror and on to
Bad Vibes Island.
Ding. I think I've already filled you in on what we're going to be speaking about today in terms of the bad vibes on this island. Mm-hmm. A school in Cambridgeshire has enacted a policy of refusing to authorise sick days related to period pain unless parents have provided related medical information. The principal of the school said that the school prioritised student well-being, but said that regular attendance was crucial for academic success. He's also said that the changes that they've made were in line with new government guidance published in August. However, this government guidance states that in the majority of cases, a parent informing the school that their child is ill can be accepted without any question or concern, and only where the school has genuine and reasonable doubt about the authenticity of the illness should medical evidence be requested to support the absence. I mean, even from the get-go, I'm not going to like speak too much like on this, because obviously I'm not someone who has periods, but how would you feel if your school enacted that policy when you were at it? like said, like, if you often you say it's because of period pain, like, if we're not going to buy it, you need to go and get a GP note.
I can only speak from the experience of someone who has periods and as someone who has experienced very, very debilitatingly painful periods in the past, right? At school, I used to go to school with colds and flus so I could use my sick days for my period. So I could literally take a day off if the first couple of days fell on a weekday, so I could use that time to have a morning off or a day off. Because personally, for me, they'd be so bad. My legs would go tingly and numb. I would have to lie in bed all day. I'd throw up from the pain. Like, I couldn't eat anything, couldn't hold anything down. Like, no painkillers would work. They would just make me feel sick. This was in my, like, teenage years, and luckily they have calmed down, even though I do occasionally still get the really bad one, but they have calmed down a lot as I've gotten older. But for anyone that has periods and painful periods, it can be so debilitating, but there is such a long process and such a gap between the symptoms and receiving a diagnosis of something like PCOS or endometriosis. And a painful period does not always mean endometriosis or something like that, right? You can just have period cramps. And there is so much misinformation on women's health and menstrual health, that basically, like, we got told in, like, my sex education that I received in primary school and secondary school about how it's supposed to be, I don't know, a teaspoon of blood, they're supposed to say, they say it is, and cramps are supposed to be, like, really mild and nothing, and, like, and they don't tell you about any of the other symptoms that come with it. They don't tell you about any of, like, the immune things that come with it, the brain fog, the mental symptoms that come with it, the other physical ailments, like, heart palpitations, chest pains, all that muscle achiness and everything, right? The fact that you burn more calories or you might feel exhausted and you can't even do anything on the days leading up to your period or the days on your period. Like, it can be so debilitating for some people. And it, but there is such a, it's a really long journey and such a big gap between having your symptoms and receiving a diagnosis. So if they require a diagnosis for every single person that experiences a period in order for them to have one day off or 2 days off, like, that is just such an unfair disadvantage on those people because they're not being allowed to rest. And I understand that it's imperative that a school needs to obviously implement policies where people aren't taking the mic, and it's obviously very important that kids are in school as much as they can be to not fall behind and things like that, which I totally get that. But I think it would do more harm than good than to force these people to sit there through geography and like actually have been so much pain that they can't even cope with it.
I think to have like a blanket policy that's like, if you're going to use period pain as a quote unquote excuse, then you need to get a doctor's note. And like you said about the delay in diagnoses as well, like you said, obviously not everyone is going to have a specified condition. It might just be that they have really painful periods, but if they do have a condition, I think one mother who is like a mother of one of the children at this school has actually said that they have really painful periods, but they didn't get diagnosed with endometriosis until they were in their 40s. So how are you going to like say that if it's possible for that to not get picked up, like when they're a teenager, and what are you going to do to say, oh, well, they must be fine, let's send them to school? Like,
and if you're going to acknowledge, and if you're going to implement blanket policies, you need to acknowledge the fact that there is such a disparity in gender, and there is such a massive gender bias in healthcare. When it comes to things like women's pain thresholds, women's symptoms, there are so many different things that we learn now of common health conditions, not to do with like menstrual health or anything, but like health conditions, ailments, long-term disabilities and stuff like that, especially those that relate to pain. We have now based like diagnostic criterias of what we know of men, because they were tested on men, you know, a long time ago. But things like anxiety or things like heart attacks, like we all learn that like the symptoms are X, Y, and Z, but so many women die from heart attacks because they don't know what the symptoms are because they're different in women than men. But we learn that it's like chest tightness and breathing difficulty here, and then but for some women it can be other things. It can be like shoulder pain, and that just goes dismissed. And there's such a big thing of like women just need to get on with it and kind of work through the pain. Because at the end of the day, and I think it's not talked about enough, a lot of women and a lot of people who menstruate have one good week a month, genuinely. Mm. There's the week that you are menstruating, then you have a pretty good week, then you can be all over the place with your emotions for the next two and a half weeks, like absolutely all over the place between your fertility window and your luteal phase, and then back straight into menstruation again. There's a very limited window where you feel like yourself and you feel free of pain, or you feel completely comfortable in your body and you don't feel bloated or dizzy or nauseous or fatigued or brain fogginess. Like, there's a very small amount of days in a month where we actually feel working at our best.
Yeah.
And you're just expected to continue on throughout the month as if nothing's going on.
I just don't understand why it's such a foreign, like, a concept that we could possibly imagine that maybe, like, I just find it so weird that it's not already, like, common practice that there is, like, a people who menstruate get, like, a certain number of days off a month. Like, just...
I think there's a few countries that have started doing it, but it is insane to think that we bleed for, you know, 5 to 7 days.
Yeah, and it's, like, ultimately, like... from the descriptions of what it's like, I'm already like, wow, like, I can't imagine doing that. But that's the whole point. I can't imagine at the end of the day. And I think it's also a bit questionable with this school in particular, the fact that it's what I assume from Mister, a male principal that has given the okay for these policies. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, yeah.
You can't implement these policies without having experienced it yourself. And that's obviously very evident in what's happened here. Mm. But I just think, like, it's very unfair to implement a blanket policy. And for people who have periods, it's very difficult to get doctor's notes because the gender bias in healthcare is so stark and women's pain is not recognized as much, or the symptoms of a period across people who menstruate are not recognized enough. And it's just such an expectation that you get on with it.
Yeah.
No matter what, which I totally understand. And, like, obviously women, like, we're so great. Like, people really do get on with it, like, throughout a period, throughout a luteal phase, throughout the whole thing, all the symptoms and what have you, like, we really do just get on with it because we have to. But the body needs rest during that time. Like, it honestly, like, me personally, just speaking from personal experience, my body cries out for rest. Like, she just wants to be in bed. She wants nice comforting food, she wants carbs, and she wants rest, and she doesn't want to be bothered. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. I think that resonates with a lot of people. And it's very hard to kind of push through that month on month.
Yeah, I always think this, like, when I think about, like, stressful times at school, like exams and stuff like that, how, like, you just have to kind of, like, you literally have to just do it. And it's, like, it is actually so unfair, but, like, yeah.
But I just think, and if you've not experienced it yourself, you can't be making rules on other people's bodies like that.
Yeah.
Without taking the time to understand the gaps and the barriers towards getting that doctor's note.
Yeah, and also we know the state of, like, the NHS and stuff in the country at the moment. Like, whilst it's a great thing, like, delays are, like, massive. And especially on something like this that is, like, somewhat time-constrained. Like, I don't understand, like, you could, like,
yeah,
maybe...
You don't have a big window to experience pains and then be, yeah, like, I need to get a note. Because, you know, for a lot of people, it's... 2 days, 3 days maybe of, like, quite intense,
yeah,
pain. So you don't have a big window, and obviously you know how the NHS works. Yeah, not that, it'd be like, you know,
come have a telephone appointment in, like, two months, yeah, time.
Precisely. And also, like, if you were to go the longer term route of actually thinking, if you think you do have a health condition that pertains to your menstrual health, that if you were to get trying to get a diagnosis of, say, PCOS or endometriosis, for example, how long that process taken, how many people who have to fight tooth and nail for those diagnoses, because it is so easy to prescribe birth control. It's so easy to just prescribe exercise and eat regularly. And that's just not enough for a lot of people. And birth control just masks it. Like, it really increases everything.
A load of other problems on top of it as well.
For a lot of people, yeah. So birth control is such a bad, but it's such a plaster, like it's a complete band-aid to the situation. And obviously for a lot of people, it still doesn't work. It makes things worse in some cases. And, like, I just don't think this is taken very seriously. And this kind of, these kind of policies just exemplify that, I think.
Yeah. I think I have been kind of pleasantly surprised by people's response to it, though. Like, it seems like there is a general sense of outrage over this rather than just a, oh, like, just get on with it kind of thing. So I'm, like, glad that people seem to be in a common place of, like, this actually isn't okay. And again, I'm just, like, surprised that, because based off what I've read, the government guidance, like I read out before, it doesn't actually say any, it says, like, it's only in exceptional circumstances that they really should be, like, needing a doctor's note. Most of the time, a parent saying they're ill is okay. So I don't know, maybe something specific has happened at this school that's made them think that they need to do this, but yeah, just to enact this blanket policy, just it's just clearly not.
I was going to say, I do wonder, like, what has happened for this to be, like, brought up in the first place. But, you know, as someone that had really painful periods in the past, like, I would still stick through it most months. It would have to be, like, really debilitatingly bad for me to take the day off. But I would try and stick through it. And I remember I've been in class and cried because of the pain. I remember I was in, like, a whole school assembly once and I was sat there sobbing because I literally couldn't feel my legs anymore. Like, I was like, I need to leave. And, like, it's so overwhelming and it's so painful that you can't... How am I supposed to concentrate on, like, maths? You have to weigh it up with how much is the child going to miss versus how much are you making them suffer and ultimately probably not pay very much attention to anyway if they're sat there in pain.
It's given put a blue paper towel on it. Literally.
For real.
Well, I think we can all agree that... Well, I think it's a good thing that this has come out, and I hope that the school does reverse its policy. I think if anything, it's kind of stabbed itself in the back kind of thing, because following this, yeah. I think you're going to have a lot more people, like, being like, actually, no, I am going to take this time off, and there's nothing you can do about it. Look, it's literally in BBC News, like, this isn't on kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Moving on to a different bad vibes island. Go over to Australia. So what I'm going to speak on now is an ongoing investigation, so we're not going to delve too much into that itself, but
also I'd say a bit of a trigger warning of just talking about sexual assault and things of that nature.
Yes. But we are going to talk a bit about the kind of public response to it in more detail. So just to give the facts, YouTuber media personality Young Philly has been charged over rape allegations in Australia. He was arrested in Brisbane on Tuesday and extradited to Perth on Wednesday to attend a court hearing. He's since had bail approved with strict conditions. The full charges against him include 4 counts of sexual penetration without consent, 3 counts of assault occasioning bodily harm, and 1 count of impeding a person's normal breathing or circulation by applying pressure onto their neck. It's alleged that he brought a woman in her 20s back to his hotel room after he had performed at a nightclub in Perth. Now, like I said, we're not going to delve into, like, whether or, like, anything to do with this, really, but I think we can both just agree that, like, these charges are very serious, and it's also horrifying to hear of, like, the amount of charges that are actually being, like, amount of charges against him kind of thing. Like, this is a very serious thing. The thing that's really, really, like, not sat right with me is the fact that so many people are just, like, openly, just without any kind of information, just openly running their mouths on social media, saying this, that about Young Philly, and giving their own takes on what supposedly happened, when we literally have no information to base it off. I can kind of understand if people are kind of going from the viewpoint of, okay, let's see and wait what happens with the case. Like, let's not comment on anything. Like, we can recognize it's bad, but let's not comment on anything to do with the actual what's happened until, like, there's been a full on investigation and court hearing, etc. But then there's some people that are literally going to the extent of, well, I've always said innocent until proven guilty. oh, the girl obviously wants clout or money. That's obviously why she's doing this. And one that really I just didn't like at all was, have you ever heard of HS Tiki Toki?
No, unfortunately, yes.
Yes. No comment. No further comment on that. Sorry, one sec. Yeah, no further comment on that. But he obviously released a video about it. And in it, he was saying, oh, yeah, obviously sexual assault is really bad. And if this has happened, then, like, it's really, really, like, it can't run. But then in the same video, he's, like, saying, all I want to say is, what was she doing in the hotel room? Like, if you know, if you go back, then, like, you know, like, what's happening. Like, and it's just, like, first of all, just, like, irrelevant. And I think it just completely misrepresents what consent actually is and, like, the intricacies of, like, how you can, in a split second, if you decide that you don't want to be doing something with another person, then that's okay to say no and immediately needs to stop. Like, I don't understand how, like, he can literally go on a public platform and literally, like, give his thing and, like, actually somewhat not incriminate himself, but literally put himself in a bit of a questionable light, even though he already does that all the time. But, yeah.
I think, like, it really infuriates me, this kind of stuff. Like, oh, I can't believe it's big 2024 and we're still teaching. These aren't even, like, young kids. These are grown adults, right? Still telling them that what consent looks like and what consent means and what consent, like, denotes and any time in which consent matters, right? Mm-hmm. How are we still having to educate grown adults on that? As a whole, like, I can't believe we're still there. And the victim blaming is just absolutely insane, of like being like, so you knew what was going to happen when you went back to that hotel room, or what were you expecting? You know, what does this even mean? What was she even doing there if she didn't think that was going to happen? That, exactly to your point, like, consent, and it's valid at any point, and you can change your mind at any point for whatever reason you want, and that has to be respected. Mm. Otherwise, it's not consensual.
Yep.
I just can't believe I'm having to, like, actually reiterate that point. And I think it, like, I've seen so much of, like, oh, this was for clout and, you know, people just want to, like, get their 5 minutes and stuff like that. And I just don't think people can physically and possibly understand how serious, like, these allegations have to be, like, for you to take it to the plea. Like, how terrified and how, like, violated you feel. And, like, it's just something that people will never understand.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, again, not to comment on the ongoing investigation, but for the fact that there's multiple different charges here, and the police have actually said that the investigation is basically formed off CCTV footage as well. So clearly, like, the fact that it's been brought to this stage, like, I'm not commenting on anything to the investigation here, but I am saying, like, look, it's got to this point. Like, I think let's not, like, start clouding things up with that. Oh, well, I think that he could never do that, blah, blah, blah. If you want to say, like, okay, let's wait and see what the court says, this is obviously horrific, fair enough. But at the same time, don't go out and doing the opposite of that and being like, well, he clearly didn't do it, she's obviously doing it for attention, blah, blah, blah. What are you basing that off? Like,
yeah, and I think, like, it's a specific type of victim blaming as well, where it's like the people that are doing it don't understand that people have the freedom to change their mind in a situation. I think there's one type where it's like, oh, what was she wearing and why were they drinking, sort of thing. So, like, you put yourself in a vulnerable position, so you knew something was going to happen to you. And then there's a side of, like, well, you actually, you know, you went somewhere with someone voluntarily and then you changed your mind, sort of thing. We're not saying that's what happened. I'm talking about, like, a bigger picture here. But, like, you went somewhere voluntarily and then you changed your mind. People can't get their heads around people changing their mind in the situation. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you put yourself in that situation, but I don't want to be there anymore. And that's totally valid.
Yeah.
Not like what were you expecting when you went there? You knew what was going to happen. Like, no one knows what's going to happen. And if you don't feel safe somewhere, you don't feel like you want to do anything, you're totally within your right to change your mind on that. And that has to be respected.
It's something that I think really... Oh, sorry. One second, camera.
But I just think, like, to be fair, on the whole, I have seen a lot of, like, discourse around it that has been talking about, like, oh, this is horrific, like, you know, I hope the person's doing okay, and like, you know, that things like this should be brought to the public eye to draw more attention to it, because, you know, I'd like to hope as a society we're progressing. But yeah, in the same light, you do see a lot of comments that are basically like just very much victim blaming, or saying it's for clout, or defending and just saying like, oh, innocent until proven guilty and stuff like that, which...
It just speaks to a larger thing, and it's something that I find quite like disappointing that they don't do this. Like, me and my wife often talk about how like in my pastime I do like to watch videos like Beta Squad, for example, that Young Philly is often collaborated with, or Sidemen, those kind of things that are typically associated with the young male British population. It's a running joke that is like probably the most like stereotypically male thing about me, is that I actually enjoy watching those as a pastime. But that being said, we've always had the conversation about how, like, not to say that it's an obligation for them to do, but I am somewhat disappointed that they never really do anything to use their platform for good, in terms of not in general. They've obviously done like charity stuff and whatever, but I'm saying in terms of this specific thinking about their target audience and the issue, the epidemic of toxic masculinity that is currently prevalent across the young British male population, they never really do anything to combat that. They never, like, I remember, like, when, like, whenever there's been something like bad in the news, I've thought about, like, oh, like, they actually have such a platform that they could, like, actually, like, not even, like, I'm not saying they need to release a video saying this is what consent is and this is what this is, but I'm saying, like, they could subtly, like, do things that, like, actually, or do, like, some kind of collaboration that actually, like, helped. And I know that if this was said to them, their response would be like, well, it's not our responsibility, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, well, ultimately, if you're a good person, I think it kind of is. Like,
I just think, like, at the moment, we're kind of fighting, like, the post-Andrew Tateification of the internet, to be honest. Like, it was so endemic, and he was allowed to run so rampant with his ideologies and his thoughts, and it's turned into such a cesspit of people being so free in their speech about, you know, their misogynistic values and their opinions on women and how women should be treated and things like that. And like this discourse that you see online time and time again, which, by the way, existed long before Andrew Tate as well. Like, he didn't start this whole thing. This has always been a thing. But it has, I do think it has become so much more prevalent and public and loud. So loud. And to be honest, on that point, Carlos is the only man that's allowed a microphone. He's the only one with a microphone license.
Yeah.
Period.
That's to save ourselves, that is sarcasm. Obviously, we're not saying that. Anyway.
But I just think we're in this, like, it's an absolute gender war. It really is. Like, I say this, like, when I talk to a lot of my friends about, like, modern dating and stuff like that. Like, oh my God, we are up against something absolutely crazy as women. Like, as straight women, like, I just feel like, oh my God, it's just mad, can't deal with it. And I just think the impact that it's probably having on a lot of young boys as well, we're gonna feel those impacts for a very long time. And Andrew Tate specifically spoke to a very specific genre of typically males, and hit on a lot of things like insecurity and loneliness and physical appearance and you know, financial stuff. And like, it was very much like hitting home on those points to drive his point of why you should act a certain way, which was terrifying. Because now you have this whole thing of like incels and like people that believe that women, you know, are like clout chasing, money hungry, like gold digging people that shouldn't even be associated with, because God knows what she could accuse you of. It's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And like, it's just, women's voices weren't heard very much before, and they're definitely not now. I don't think we've made a lot of progress in that department. Like, there are so many different cases, the things that we've talked about that happened in India, things like in that Irish court where they used her, poor girl, when they used the pair of her underwear as evidence as to why she was asking for the sexual assault that was taking place against her. Like, that was horrific. And in so many instances around the world, we see the victim blaming of, like, what was she wearing? Why was she drinking? I say she, obviously this goes both ways as well, but, like, I'm just talking very general here. But, like, what the person was wearing, what the person was consuming, alcohol, whatever, where their location was, what they, you know, initially consented to go and do, or where they went to go, or into a hotel room, for example. Like, and what we're not getting here is the validity of consent in any situation and how it can be revoked at any time and therefore should be respected constantly. And I can't believe I'm having to say that.
Yeah. I mean, if there's any positive outcome with this, I would say, like I said, if, say, for example, in particular, like Beta Squad, seeing as Young Philly is very much affiliated with them, what we want from them really is not like some, and I'm not saying in any way that they're like responsible for Young Philly's actions or what he has or hasn't done, whatever, but what they could do as a positive thing in this circumstance is not do some kind of quote-unquote apology video, again, because I recognize that they're not necessarily apologizing for anything, not some kind of statement on it. What they can do is actually think, how can we implement our into our content stuff that actually combats this, like, the topic that this, like, news actually 100%. Entails, like...
100%. And I've now seen a lot of videos come up of, like, past clips and footage of, like, things that he said that have been, like, in a misogynistic nature in the past and stuff, and it's like, how do you check people on that? And I think that's something that we could definitely talk about in the future. Write it down.
Yeah.
But, like, I do think, like, it... And also, there was another podcast called Tiny Meat Gang Podcast in America where the guy, Cody Ko, he got done on, like, a lot of allegations of talking to some girls where they were underage. And obviously, he knew they were underage because I think they were in the public eye and stuff like that. I actually didn't follow the story very much. I think that is the overall premise of, like, what happened. And their podcast had just kind of, like, moved on. Not really acknowledged it. I think there was, like, a single video that doesn't even really touch on it. It just kind of talks about how they, what the content's going to look like going forward, and the content just carried on from there on, and he's just not in any of the videos anymore. So I would be interested to see how this is going to be handled, and I hope it would be handled better than that.
I hope so, but I also have, like, little hope, if I'm being honest. We'll see. All right, moving on to another part of the world now, in US, obviously, Hurricane Milton is going. I think, like, it actually didn't cause as much damage as was expecting, but it still caused a massive amount of damage. The thing that we wanted to talk about was what
we're going on an adventure, Carlos.
Oh, where are we going, Simran?
Downstairs.
What have you, like, seen the Amazon?
Downstairs.
Have you seen the Amazon driver again?
No.
Why are we going downstairs? Why are we
going downstairs? My washing machine's going off.
Your washing machine? What?
Carry on talking.
Right. The thing that we want to talk about in relation to Hurricane Milton is what we're experiencing now is hurricanes, natural disasters in a Gen Z media glorified world, basically. And there have just been so many instances on social media. Like, I brought this up as a topic to speak about with Simran, and she said that she'd seen various videos as well. Just on social media, of people purposely going out into the hurricane to kind of stream during it, or create, like, kind of surf on, like, the like storm surges and stuff like that. And I'm just like, first of all, why do you not value your life enough to want to do that? Like, just to earn a bit of money. And secondly, it's just like, I just don't understand, like, how have we got here?
Obviously, like, I've been talking about this. I think, first of all, we send our condolences to anyone that's, like, affected, sending lots of love and thoughts and prayers. Because it's very serious. It's very scary, actually. Like, I've been following it on the news. It's petrifying what's going on. Also, there's a bigger thing, like, I think, my breath from running up the stairs. There's a bigger thing of, like, I saw a lot of people, like, I got a few American people on my Instagram, and they were saying about how there's a mandatory evacuation zone, and but no government issued ways to evacuate. So there's no regular flights going out, like, you know, like state paid for flights that like are on, going out on a very regular basis. The highways are backed up, or they were backed up. People were sat in like 7, 8, 10 hours of traffic just to get out of the area. And then like trains and stuff, like there was nothing controlled by the state that was, you know, free and accessible.
Yeah, it's kind of like, okay, there's a massive natural disaster heading your way. Just to let you know, you need to leave, sort yourself out.
Yeah, and you implemented a mandatory evacuation zone, but you didn't make evacuation accessible.
Mm.
Which is crazy. And then there's obviously like really, really sad stories coming out about people who have like, you know, a few kids, or like they don't have a support system, and they don't have anywhere else to go. Their whole livelihood is in, you know, where they live. They don't have family elsewhere. Like, where are these people actually supposed to just go? I understand, like, just get out, but then what?
Yeah, and also how, like, not everyone has a car. Like,
and I think they're doing like a $700, $750 payment when like people's houses are no longer there.
Cheers for that.
So yeah, that on that side of things, like, it is really terrifying, and sending like so much love and like support to like anyone who's affected. And then you also think about it. There's an area directly outside the mandatory evacuation zone as well, who are also going to be affected. They're just not in the evacuation zone. Mm. They also need support.
Yeah.
You have to draw the line somewhere, I get that.
But it's not black and white, like, as to how people are going to be affected. So, yeah.
But yeah, and then obviously reading all that, and then you open TikTok and you see like three teenage boys on a sofa just swimming through the water on like what used to be a motorway. And you're like, so how, what is going on in Florida?
It's just bizarre. I think I would argue that, like, okay, this is natural selection taking place. If these people want to be idiots, then fair enough, let them do it for clout. And then if they end up perishing, then, like, you know, I'm sorry, you've literally been told to evacuate. Oh. This is a dangerous thing. If you're going to be stupid, then, like, I'm sorry, but, like, you have brought that upon yourself. But the thing that's annoying is, obviously, like, emergency services are going to try and save you. Like, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't be saved, obviously, and I made the perishing thing before, I was, like, being sarcastic. But the thing that's annoying is that you've made the active choice to go out into this natural disaster to try and film content for a couple of views or a couple of, like, dollars or whatever you're getting from it.
Mm.
And if you get into trouble, emergency services aren't going to, like, first of all, they're not even going to know, like, okay, they brought this upon themselves. They've literally gone into this on purpose. But they're also, even if they did know that, their responsibility is to still save you. So it's very much like a selfish thing to do, to kind of go out knowing that, okay, I probably am going to get saved, like, or people are going to try and save me if I do this, like, sort of thing. Like, when these resources could be used elsewhere on people that are actually, like, caught up in this, like, without, through no fault of their own kind of thing.
Yeah, and like, it's the real gravity of the situation. You see on the news, like, people are writing their names, their full name, and their like date of birth and stuff, like, on their body. Yeah. So like, when, you know, they're literally saying like, when I am found, at least I can be identified, which is like, I've literally got like chills just saying that. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And you're on a surfboard with the alligators. Also, I see those videos and all the comments are like, isn't there like electric currents in the water? Isn't there literal crocodiles in the water? Like,
that's a very good point. Literally, like, shark.
Not electric kind of... But yeah, Florida, man. Literally, there's some scary things in the water there.
Yeah, like...
They got sharks?
Not like... To be fair, I think they're more like up north, but they can be around that area. I think it depends on the time of year. But
scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, be safe.
Yeah. Literally, like, don't, like, why? Like, it's a very weird time that we've, like, come into, isn't it? Where it's kind of like...
That's clout chasing.
Yes.
That's clout chasing.
Yes.
That's the definition of it.
There's, yeah. Can't be bothered. Anyway, it seems like a good place to round today's episode off. Thank you so much to everyone that has tuned in. What you got planned Simran?
Oh, guys, I'm in Seville next week.
All right, for some.
What are you doing next week? Are you having a do-nothing day? Are you taking it off?
Yeah, I've got Monday and Tuesday off. So.
Oh, Monday and Tuesday?
Yeah.
Love it.
Me and my friends are meeting up tomorrow for a couple of drinks and then having fish and chips, which is very on brand for
me. Oh, so. Yay.
Yeah. Should be Love nice.
It. Have fun.
Thank you.
Next time I speak to you, you're going to be 20.
Next time I speak to you, like on camera, you're going to be 25.
Thousand tack.
And on that note, thank you everyone for tuning in.
Oh, I was gonna yap. I'm learning. My Spanish has gotten so much better, guys.
Oh yeah, thank you for adding me to your Duolingo family plan for 3 days.
My God, my God, Carlos, I'm back on the free version of Duolingo. So basically, guys, last year I booked a solo trip to Barcelona for myself, and I've always had like a little bit of Spanish understanding. When I say little, I mean little. But I was like, I would love to learn it. So I joined Duolingo, as most people do when they want to learn a language. And I loved it so much. And if you didn't know that, the free version of Duolingo, you only get 5 mistakes. So in a whole 24-hour period, you can only make 5 mistakes, which I think is, they obviously don't want you to learn your language. They just want you to pay money, right? Anyway, so I lost and I paid the money. So I paid like £60 for a year membership of Duolingo because obviously I was bawling back then. Things have changed for me in the last year. And I'm just not paying £60 for a premium Duolingo subscription. So I'm back on free Duolingo and it sucks. So basically what I said to myself was, I'm going to try it, and if I hate it, I'm just going to spend the money and do it again. I might ask for it for a birthday present.
£60 to spend on Duolingo.
Because it really does help. Like, you get unlimited mistakes, and I need to make mistakes. Otherwise, how am I going to learn?
Can't you like do like things to earn hearts back and stuff?
Is it?
I think
I don't know, because my hearts go so fast. I barely get through a lesson.
I think you need to, like, as someone that has somehow managed to avoid, like, I've not paid for Duolingo ever and somehow managed to get a year-long thing, I've learned the ways to make sure. I basically make sure I get my streak by doing, like, easy lessons and then do, like, the hard stuff.
But, like, my I don't know what I was going to say.
No. Too busy like, stuck in Spanish world.
I know. But, like, I got to the point with Duolingo where, like, the last couple of months, I weren't, like, I have been doing the bare minimum. Like, I've just been doing the fastest, easiest lesson I could do, get the streak, and then dip. Like, I was in, like, the Diamond Tournament, guys, which, if you're familiar with Duolingo, that is, like...
This is the problem with Duolingo, is that it does get to a stage where you're doing it purely for the sake of, like, your streak or whatever, rather than actually learning, like...
Yeah, because now I'm back in, like, Emerald League, which is, like, the fourth one or something, like, so bad. No, it really is ill. I hated that. But, I used to care about it so much. Now I don't really care anymore. But, like, now I care even less. And there's adverts, and I don't want to watch some, like, farming iPhone
the
game.
Adverts are so annoying. Also, the fact that it's always, like, one, like, random advert and then one Duolingo advert. I could literally quote that, like, the... Say this in words, Duolingo Plus. Like, no.
I think I might just do it, you know.
Anyway, thank you everyone for tuning in. We'll see you same time next week. Until then, bye.